Like in 3 months, it got like, okay, so I wrote the title of this blog post is Hacking Google for 500K, but it's actually 670K right now.
Oh my gosh.
In basically 3-4 months.
Oh my gosh.
From just running this.
That's crazy, man.
I literally have done the exact same thing you did in this blog post, and I did it for like 3 weeks, and it was extremely structured. It was like, you know, consider all the types of auth, consider all the types of request, consider all the types, you know, like all the different API keys we have, you know, like the 800 API keys we have. Like, let's test everything comprehensively from top to bottom with all the discovery docs that we've had access to or that we've leaked through bugs or gadgets using every form of auth and every API key. And like, I found some bugs, but I mean, I'm talking on the order of probably like 10% of what you found, right? Like, I think I probably made like 50K across all those bugs. Yeah. So, I mean, this is definitely downstream. I don't think that we should write this off as like you just using AI well. This is downstream of your expertise by a mile.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
And taking that and then taking the leads from the AI and exploiting them further manually, I'm sure, right? You would say that that's true, correct, Broodcat?
Yeah, exactly. So I think like a lot of the leads I get, I don't just leave it at that. I try to like push the impact as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But I would also say in terms of the AI hunting, right? So you don't want to give too much to the AI, because if the AI has like access to do like anything it wants, it's not going to like, for example, I'll just try to explain this in a simple way, mm-hmm. but pretty much the authentication itself, I've kind of like abstracted that out of the AI completely. So the AI doesn't even think of that. Mm-hmm. It just focuses on this one task of testing the API, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And another thing is there's so much noise when it comes to like these hack bots or whatever. You have to find a way to filter that out. So for me, that was like building this thing where I could sort of see the request and response, and I could like, and there's no way the AI could fake that, because it's like every request the AI does, I tie it to like an operation, right? And that operation is then like associated with like the request and response. So I can just see what it did. If there's like a PII leak, I can see the PII leak. Mm. There's no bullshit, right?
Wow. Yeah. So you're getting a really, one, you're abstracting away a lot of the complicated parts of hacking on Google. And then you're not giving the AI room to do much besides exactly what you need it for, which is sort of filling in these pieces of information and correlating them across, you know, different Google APIs. That's pretty sick, man. That's pretty sick. All right. Well, okay. Hold on. We got rolling there. We're back with part two of Broodcat's saga here. And today we're going to talk about AI and how he has made over $500,000 hacking on Google using AI over the past, it's not even like a year, it's like 8 months at this point, maybe. So dude, I'm so excited for this. I think before we get into all the AI stuff, we also wanted to kind of go back and do a refresher on some of the discovery doc stuff. Let's do a refresher on that, and then we'll jump right into the AI component.
So Arvin, you built basically a system for this specifically, right?
Yeah. So pretty much I built this whole thing where I can take a discovery document, right? I can parse it out and have this whole UI where I can see each method and tap on it and inspect it, right? So instead of doing an approach where converting the Swagger and trying to look at it that way, I had this one UI. I took a lot of inspiration from Google's. So do you know how every Google API that's a public API, they have this like try it, like explore or whatever.
Yeah.
So I really love that because you can just see the methods and test it like right away. So I took a lot of inspiration from that. So it seemed to be open source at one point, but I guess they just made it not open source anymore, but it's fine. Like I made my own version of it. So like my own version has like all the auth and everything all configured. So you just have to, all you have to do is just upload your document, tap on the endpoint, you can start testing right away. You don't even need burp because it has like a burp inside of it, right? So I just focus my time on testing it. So this is just for like testing the leads in my AI reports, right? So I can just test it directly.
Mm. Yeah, dude, it's beautiful to have tools like that that reduce the friction so much that you can just, you know, that's when you know that your methodology is really streamlined, when you have these super custom tools for this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Okay, so we've got the discovery docs, we've got the, you know, sort of built-in burp or Kaido or whatever, you know, replayer for these specific calls. How are you tying the AI into this and getting it to give you these leads from the discovery doc structure that you've built out?
So let me back up a bit into explaining how I even got into this in the first place.
Okay.
So there was like this bug swat in Mexico last year, right? So the whole bug swat, I wasn't actually hacking. I was just thinking about like how, because I was looking at the source code. Like Googlers, they let you see the source code to any app you want or anything. So I was completely fully abusing this. Mm-hmm. But that also got me interested back in the hacking, right? So for this, like around this time, I've been using Claude for like around a year. So even my like Rector Proto tool was completely written by Claude, like back in the old days of Claude. Mm-hmm. So I would like write it in the web chat and then copy it and paste it and then make the whole thing with that. So yeah, I was doing all that, but I had an idea, like, why couldn't I use Claude or like whatever AI, and why can't it test the discovery documents? Because you see, the thing about discovery documents and testing the endpoints is just tedious, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking for access controls, I don't think it's like too technically complicated. It's just more of like, do you have the time to like look through every single API? Right? Considering how many APIs there are, it's like, it's just too much, right? You have to settle on your scope or whatever. But in this case, if I can use AI to look through everything, it'll be so much faster. So I had this idea and I was telling Sriram and everybody, but like, and they were listening to me, but I don't think they understood like what I meant. Like I was fully like engrossed in this. So this is the only thing in my mind, like how I can use AI to do this. So right after Buxwell ended, like I was on a flight back. I did like 1 week later, I had a whole MVP working. So I had this like web UI where I could sort of import like a discovery document and it would like show all the methods on the side, show everything. And so Google has this auth like called first party auth v2, right? So they actually ended up, so this is something funny, right? They actually ended up leaking the source code or whatever, like the client side's, like the TypeScript source off this first party auth in some random like Google site, because they had the source maps enabled. So you can get like the whole specification of this first party auth from there. So from there, I realized that first party auth is not as simple as I originally thought. Like there's like this well-known like Stack Overflow post that's like documenting this auth, right? But there's a bit of extra like fields you can have for like getting the full thing. So
sorry, what did you say there was? What did you say there was about the auth? A blog post?
There's like these extra fields that you can have in the first party auth for the authorization header. It's not just a SAPI SID hash. I mean, there is. It's a SAPI SID hash, but the way you compute it. So this is required for many APIs, like Drive Front End PA, the Google APIs I call them. You can't just use the normal one. You have to use this one. So I was able to figure out all this from that. And actually, yeah, so this was super useful. I combined this with the discovery docs and like the whole like discovery doc thing where I had a UI. And in the end, I could just go to my website, click on any method, it would have the whole like burp thing set up for me. I could just copy the request or play it in the thing itself with authentication, everything handled. So the only thing I had to do was like change the request parameters. So I built out this whole thing first, right? This whole UI. But then the next step was, once I had this UI, I need to get API keys, right? If to test APIs, you can't just use the API. You need keys. So I had this like humble collection of like 100 keys or whatever, but that's all. I need way more than that.
Right.
So I did this effort with Michael Dalton. He's another researcher. I spent like so long like trying to find as many sources of keys as I could. So this meant like I was trying, like I took every single APK that Google has ever published. Like I scraped all of that, 60,000 APKs. I like went through all of them, like extracted out as many keys as I could from that. Even for IPAs, we like decrypted it and we took all the keys from that. We set up like this Chrome extension with Google like debugger API, and we were able to sort of like look at every single request automatically and capture keys, right? Then we went through every single Google like domain and we were using as much functionality as possible and trying to get keys that way. So in total, right, this whole thing like ended up with like a few thousand keys from just this whole effort. But the problem was it wasn't over yet. See, many of these keys, they might be customer keys. They wouldn't be like Google's keys, right? And I want to keep the scope to just Google. I don't want to attack customers, right? Mm. So for this reason, I found a super interesting endpoint. Like, I don't remember where I came across it, but it's in Cloud Marketplace. It's some endpoint where you can pass in a project number and it tells you which domain it's from. So you can get a project number from any key from just going to like say protos of googleapis.com. If I go to discovery document, I try a key there. This API for the project for this key is not enabled for this API. So it tells you, it gives some error and it leaks the project number in that error. So you can then use that project number and check which domain this key is from, essentially. So I was able to filter out all non-Google ones. Yeah.
Very cool. So this allows you to filter it down.
Yeah, exactly. So there's also another way to get keys. Okay, so I'm not going to say here publicly whether I got keys from this or not, but if you're smart, you can figure out there's like Z handlers in Google, right? There's like these debug handlers. Sometimes they're leaked, right? And if you go to like certain debug handlers, like FlagZ, right, you can find cheese inside there, right? Or Proxy is like an LFI as a service, right? You can just use any LFI you want and read any file you want. So, and this is on the board class, right? You can just dump like the classes of running processes and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And then get the keys from those.
Dude, that is a crazy thing. I've not heard of that. That's got to produce some crazy powerful keys.
So, okay, on the topic of zhandlers, something super funny. Like this was quite recently, but Google accidentally leaked some random binary. Okay, so okay, first of all, these zhandlers are like, you're supposed to be the corporate network. You could access them. You have to be like connected to like the intranet or whatever. Otherwise, you won't see them. They're like on www.google.com/proxy, right? But Google leaked some binary, right? And inside there, they bundled all the zhandlers with it. So I had zhandlers running locally.
Really?
So
wow.
Yeah, it was super cool. So I could see all the zhandlers, and inside there, I found this one zhandler. Like I was just for fun. I was just looking at reflected XSS. Like, is there some like XSS in this? Like, because it's on the main domain, like www.google.com/whatever, or any domain has the zhandlers for it. So I saw it as like this one like path. I could just put like a super simple XSS payload and it would pop an alert. And I sent it to Ezekiel. I was like, hey, can you check this out? And it popped an alert for him.
No way, dude. Oh my gosh. On www?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Dude, like the amount of crap I went through to get an XSS on www, and you just find this Z handler with a simple, dang it, dude.
Yeah, but this only works for Googlers, but I could argue that like that's where the most impact is.
Oh yeah.
Like you can sort of once you have access to that, you can start fetching all the internal stuff and So this is pretty funny. But this binary also had like the full stubby like implementation, the server side implementation, the client side implementation. So I reverse engineered like all of this. Like I have a working like stubby client that I can just play around with.
Wow. That's amazing.
So you can get all this from zhandlers essentially. But yeah, so but the story doesn't end there because every API key has their own like restrictions to it. So like there's like web API keys, like there's web restrictions or like Android restrictions or iOS restrictions. So depending on the restriction, you have to supply certain headers in order to make it work. So for web, that's referrer header, or like for Android, there's like some special like header you have to supply. So you have to like brute force the values for all of these, right? If you don't have the values for these, it's basically useless. You can't really use the key, right? So I spent a whole effort like individually looking at each key and trying to brute force the values and storing that in my database. So I had a whole database, all the keys and all the values for each key. So this was super useful. I think I had like around 3,600 keys from all this.
Dang.
So
3,600 keys that are Google's.
Yeah.
Oh exactly. My gosh, dude, that is way bigger than my collection. I thought I was doing good with like 800. He's got 3,600 keys. Wow.
So yeah, that was like, see, because if you think about it, right, keys are the only thing that's preventing you from using the API.
Yeah.
Right. So this for AI scanning Google, like keys are the most critical thing. You have to get as many keys as you want if you want to access all the APIs, or else you're just limited to whatever APIs that your keys can have. Right. So yeah, then I brute force like a list of all the Google APIs. So something interesting is if you send a GET request to any Google API and look at the server header, it tells you like if you see some server header there, you can tell if it's like a valid Google API or not. So you can like kind of brute force and find all these like various Google APIs. Then you can use various tricks to leak the discovery document of this API. So then I had this whole like collection of discovery documents for all the APIs, right? And then I put all this together, right? So I built this AI tool, I had to find which keys are enabled for each API. I had to write like a script that goes through each method, tries to get first party auth working there, like, and then it tries to brute force like each key until it finds the keys working for each API. Then I had that whole thing in a database, right? So then I could go to any API. So my front end will look like this now. I could go to any API. I had all the keys there. I could select which key I wanted. I could play all the keys because some keys have different responses. So I click a play all and everything works in the UI and I can see the responses and play around with parameters. I had all this going on, right? So then the next step was to actually use AI to scan everything, right? Because now I can just do this manually, but I don't have time for all that. So I implemented like a basic like Ralph like Wiggum loop. So this was back in the day, like there was no concept of like this control plane of bash, right? Mm-hmm. So nowadays we're all using Claude Code, which has like access to bash. But back then, this wasn't really like a widely thing. Like MCP was just pretty new, I guess. And so I just used like AI SDK and I was like writing some like simple thing with that, where I had like MCP tools for each thing, right? So I had like these three, like I had like, okay, I had like a few MCP tools. First one was a Chrome API tool where I can Chrome an API. The second one was report vulnerability, and the third one was complete testing. So if you this Chrome API at first, right, it wasn't optimized at all. Like I was sending so much extra stuff which wasn't needed. Like in this Chrome API body, right? Maybe you want to show the document. I could like sort of.
Yeah, I'll share it right now.
Yeah.
Actually, it's going to be a little bit challenging because I've got this behind. You've got this behind auth currently, right? Because the article that should be. Hopefully will be released in conjunction with this episode. We'll see pending approvals and stuff like that. But currently it's behind auth. So let me go ahead and see if I can share it. Here we go.
I think just go to the simplifying probe API section.
Okay. Simplifying probe API. There it is right here. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So it looks super ugly at first. Like I was sending all this like method ID and like path and or like all this stuff. I mean, okay, path is needed, but there's a bunch of stuff like host that wasn't needed. Like why does the AI need to send this every single time? And the AI is constructing this MCP itself. So it has to think of this and write it. So I wanted to abstract as much as possible away from the AI. I want the AI to just focus on testing itself. So I simplified this a lot. So it's just now it just supplies the endpoint, the path, because sometimes you have to supply path parameters, right? And for the accounts, right? I just gave it like include creds. So you can use include creds, supply the Gaia ID of the account I want to use, and it doesn't have to worry about auth itself. It just thinks of this body.
Okay. Right? So this is a perfect example of how you're abstracting away things from the AI to make it simpler for it to test as well.
Exactly. Because if you were to like let it control auth itself, right, it's gonna hallucinate more or like have issues with that. So I want the AI just focus on creating request bodies to test it. Right, because that's the hard part. That's the part of these AI to think about.
Right.
How do you, like, in the application's context, how do you create, like, a write request body or something to test this API?
Now, I did want to push on something here. You said that you got all this hooked up via MCPs. And I know that you were architecting a lot of this in, like, you know, 2024, 2025, that sort of thing. But the best practice that we've seen nowadays in the industry is to be using skills for these sort of things. Are you thinking about re-architecting, or do you think you're going to stick with your MCP structure?
Well, I would say in this case, for what he's doing here, mm-hmm. actually, I would think that the key point is actually the CLI piece, right?
Yep.
The skill might tell it how to use it, like the same way I'm sure he told it how to use this MCP, because there's always MCP docs as well. But the way that I would think about like doing this simplified thing he did here would actually be like, you know, a skill plus a command line utility, which is passing in, you know, exactly. a few of these parameters.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean by skill.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's actually the way I do it right now. I'm not doing, like, this was back in the day, like, okay. maybe 2025 or whatever, when it wasn't too, like, we weren't using Bash that much, right? But nowadays, my system is all, like, a CLI. I just have a CLI, and I don't use the skill. I just tell it, like, the prompt or whatever, the system instructions. I tell it how to use this CLI, and, yeah, like, that works very well okay. for me. So I'm not actually, like, using MCP at all.
Okay, yeah. so nowadays it is essentially a skill. It's just not in a skill. It's just in the system prompt, how to use your CLI tool.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, so then the other issue I had was, you remember how I mentioned that different keys could have different responses?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I had, like, a play all functionality, right? But how do I, like, give this to the AI? So, sure, I could like, do every single request and then give it like every single response back, but it's like wasting responses because a lot of the time it's going to be the same response. So instead of doing that, I kind of like grouped them together. So I basically made this mapping where I have like a hash or whatever off the response body, and then I can like map it together, and the AI just sees like each result, and it sees like, okay, like response body hash is response one, and then it could look at response one to see what response one is. So it doesn't have to send the same response every single time. So I'm just reducing the amount of like tokens. It's like being wasted in random stuff like this.
Dude.
That's a really good solution though, because like, wow. you know, like you said, you don't want it to have to look at every single one for like 100 keys. And I'm sure on a lot of these services, it's enabled on like hundreds of keys, right? And so this basically yeah. condenses down all the ones that don't have data in them, and then, you know, gives you unique responses for the ones that do have data.
So then the other thing is I had to apply my knowledge of Google wow. APIs. So Google APIs, they tend to give like super weird responses. For example, if you get a response saying method not found, it doesn't mean the method isn't found. It just means like you don't have the visibility label on your key when you're trying to fetch this method, right? So the AI is not supposed, how's the AI supposed to know this, right? So the AI only knows so much in this context menu. So I basically simplified this out. So for all these generic error messages, I basically converted into like the sort of standard error. So it just says like standard error, missing required visibility label, or standard error, like invalid argument, no details. right? So instead of providing the whole thing for each request,
you baked in your knowledge into an error for your local for the model you're running.
That's really cool.
Exactly.
That is really good. Now, this is the correct way of implementing AI tools.
Yeah, no, the way I would have done this, which is incorrect, is put in the skill. If you see param not found, that means missing required visibility label. But now it's having to like do this like extra leap of logic every time it sees that, whereas you just baked it straight into your tool.
Yeah.
So cool.
You know what's so beautiful about this too, is this is very much how humans work as well. Right? Like as little friction as you can have when testing these things, the better. And, you know, in obviously in our brains, we know, you know, okay, if it's 404, then it means I'm missing the visibility label and it's there. And, you know, eventually it just becomes like, you know, you don't really think about it. But honestly, as little friction as you can possibly have, you know, between what you see and inhibiting your thought processes, right? That's better for testing, which is why you built out that whole environment in the front end, right? Where you're parsing discovery docs, you just press play and go. And you're also applying that to the AI agent here in a really, really effective way. That's freaking sick, dude.
And not only did I provide like the standard error type, I would also provide like an explanation. So if you scroll down a bit, right, you can see standard error explanation. This request was rejected by the application due to invalid arguments, but no details are provided. So it kind of explains this error to it if it doesn't understand what this error is. So it doesn't have to like relate to past knowledge. It just sees it right here. So this worked out really well for me. So in terms of the AI figuring out like these errors, because otherwise it would just keep reporting like these leads that they're nonsense. Like, or like it would just think something wrong and like not attack something more, when in reality that something could be done more here. So that pretty much like worked for this. But the problem was still validation. So I had this whole thing going and it was running and it was producing so much noise though. Like I would say like 90% of what it said was like complete noise. It was just nonsense report, right? So, and I had to go through each one and validate them. And it was super tiring for me. So I wanted to find a way, how can I cut down this 90% jump, right? How can I make it like super, I want like super high signal. So in this case, I figured out this like the solution where I could have like an operation ID. So every time the AI makes a tool call, right, I tie it to some sort of ID. And when it makes a lead, it has to reference this IDs that it made. So it knows which ID, it knows which operation ID it did. So it just has to reference that ID inside the report, and I'll reject the report if it doesn't have any IDs. So it can't make a false report. And the other thing was, like a lot of the times in Google, there's a lot of things that like you would think might look like a bug, but it's not really a bug. So I like fixed the system problem a lot, and I basically had this like testing rules where like, oh, if you ID enumeration, like sure, that's cool, but it's not a bug. Okay, it's like it's interesting. You can use this for testing, but if you can tell that ID 1 exists and ID 2 doesn't exist, like I don't really care about that. I don't want to report this to VIP. So like, and also give it like ideas for maybe like testing IDORs. Like you can use a few values. If you notice there, like if you scroll down a bit, you see don't know a parameter value, use one test me default. I wonder if that's how it found like the client ID default. I mean, or that it could have been another way, because yeah, but.
Should we also add a dash there? Because I feel like you've mentioned seeing dash in some fields too.
That's a great point.
But if you add,
I was going to say, should we add a dash there for the don't know param value? Because I feel like sometimes in paths, the project ID will just be dash.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. I built out this whole like sort of this whole thing, and I wrote there like even severity levels, so I can have like a debug means okay, it's like internal debug info that's leaked, but it's not like leaking some random Google type, right? Or like a suspected IDOR, but you have no way to like prove it. So that's like info. Our medium is like these few like things like a Gaia ID to email, but a critical or a high would be like an IDOR that's leaking people's PII, right? So and so I built up this whole thing, and the signal was super high. Like I would say like most reports I got were all valid, and they're all real vulnerabilities. So at this point, I ran this across the whole Google, like all 14,000 APIs on Google. I had like a whole session. Oh yeah, and not just this. I will also have to group it together in groups, because you see a discovery document is quite big. If I just have a whole testing session just for one discovery document, it's gonna like focus on one part and leave out another part. So instead of doing that, I sort of made them like, I had like this whole process beforehand where I would like group these endpoints into like front groups, I guess you could say, and it would test each group for one whole session for each group. So that way, like everything is having attention given to it. It's not like just going to focus on one area and ignore everything else.
And I guess if you're doing that, there needs to be decent documentation so that you can compare notes cross groups, though, right? Like if one primitive from one group needs to be used in another, you know, group, is that something you've implemented or?
Yes, I did. So I made some like sort of summary thing where it like some at the very end of a testing session, it summarizes everything it learned from that and it passes that on to the context of the next testing group.
Nice. Yeah, that's really good. You just
I need to audit that file. Can you hand me that file that gets passed from
we're gonna need those just to you know just for journalistic purposes. That's great. I actually can't believe that you like are you sure you want to leak this whole this part of the system prompt here? Like
yeah, sure. Everything is public.
Oh my gosh.
I'm happy to give all this.
Dude, you're so generous.
Yeah. I am very very blown away.
Justin, you've got 2 weeks.
Yeah, seriously. I'm glad we have a 2 week heads up on this. This is crazy.
Yeah.
You just casually mentioned 14K APIs. That's a lot of APIs, dude. I think I've got somewhere to the tune of 2K. You mentioned some technique before for brute forcing and then being able to tell off of the server header. Is that anything you care to elaborate on there or...
Yeah, so that's pretty much how you can, I mean, you can find APIs throughout many races, right? You can see from like the APKs or from the JS files, right? Mm-hmm. There's actually this super cool trick you can do in JS files where you can like, okay, I don't remember exactly what it was, but you know how JS files have like module system?
Yeah.
Right? So you can actually dump the full JS file without like just those modules, like with everything. So you can choose like D equals to one or D equals to zero, something like that.
Right.
And you can dump the whole JS file. So that's kind of how you can get more like keys or more host names from there. So I collected host names from all these various parts, right? And then I used those various tricks to leak the discovery document, even though they tried blocking it, right? So maybe you can hit it through like gRPC or something and it'll leak the discovery document. So there's a lot of like tricks you can do with this. So that's in total, I have like 14,000 discovery documents, like almost every single discovery document in Google.
14,000 right? Discovery documents?
Yeah.
Holy, wow, dude. That is crazy. I thought you were saying you had 14K APIs, not 14K discovery documents. That's insane, dude.
Yeah, holy. So I had all of that. Yeah. So I had this whole gold mine. I just need to like extract it now. So I have everything set up, time to roll. So I ran it across the whole Google. It found so many bugs. Like in 3 months, it got like, okay, so I wrote the title of this blog post is Hacking Google for 500K, but it's actually 670K right now.
Oh my gosh.
In basically 3-4 months.
Oh my gosh.
From just running this.
That's crazy.
Well, we have our clip for the start of the episode.
Yeah, seriously. What the heck, dude? That is insane. So really, a couple comments here. One, I can clearly see your OSINT background coming in strong here, right? Like you are really thinking about this almost like a big data project, right? Where you are, you know, doing a ton of recon, grabbing all this data from all sorts of areas, cross-correlating it, getting primitives, getting, you know, abstracting away things into modules, right? This is like classic OSINT behavior here. And then you're tying it all together and then AI is the glue between all of these different pieces that is helping fill in the blanks. That's sick, for one. For two, I wanted to ask specifically, you've done a lot of work getting different auth methods for Google. You mentioned first-party auth. You've also done some really excellent work on Android-related auth. There's also some references in here to iOS-related auth. In your experience, what is the most... Do you have, off of vibes, the auth method that is producing most access to the things that you
definitely
want?
Like first party auth, like that has so much access to almost all APIs, as long as the API has a host name of client6.google.com. So okay, you have to take note of this. Mm-hmm. So not all APIs have this alias. Mm-hmm. Only some APIs have an internet exposed client6.google.com. And if it does, like 90% of the time, you can use first party auth for it. Right. But there's
many
times
where 90% of the time
it doesn't work. Yeah, I would say 90%.
Oh, dude, I'm doing something wrong then. That is very high. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so pretty much it's super good, but I also implemented like a bearer token. So I have a bunch of like these Android clients and even web clients. So that's a whole different thing that I did. I don't think it's covered in this article, but I basically implemented all of this. So when you send a request, the play all thing, it's doing all of this. It's not just the keys with first party auth. It's doing bearer auth, it's doing Android auth, doing iOS auth, everything.
And have you found that sometimes you will, I saw, you know, you do multiple requests with multiple different keys there and give the response back, you know, in long form. Have you found that if you're using the same API key but a different auth method, that sometimes you will get different results, or is it mostly tied to the API key?
So API keys only like a web concept. You don't really use API keys with a bearer token, mm-hmm. because a bearer token usually contains like the authorization of a GCP product.
Okay.
Itself.
Well, what about, if that makes sense. What about the situations? I guess there are some situations where you've got first party auth, or you've just got an API key, you know, that sort of thing, right? Have you found, you know, a lot of, I guess, or maybe you've got a bearer token, right, that has a specific scope to it. And then you've also, is there never an overlap where you've got first party auth and it works with the Android auth or whatever?
Oh yeah, like many, many times it works with both, but I would say like, yeah, but most of the time, like if you want like the thing that works for most places, it's going to be first party auth.
Mm, it's going to be first party auth. Okay. Gotcha. All right, man. Wow. Well, that is pretty sick. I've got a lot of stuff to go back and review on my own infrastructure. I will say, you know, Joseph and I both have a similar system. Like Joseph said last week's episode, we have a similar system to this. We have, you know, gadgets that we're tying together to cross-correlate, you know, these API keys, you know, correlate project names, correlate all of this stuff. But we have done it much less successfully, and it's still been good for me. I've enjoyed it. You know, I've found some good bounties out of it, but like not 670K worth of bounties.
No. I think it's mostly the auth thing. I don't think that I have really solved first party auth or had like connected it to the client six APIs in the way you did, Brutcat.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely did. And I still didn't have that piece. I think the area where he's crushing it right now after reading through his article is actually enumeration of the referrer and origin header, which is massive, right? So can you talk a little bit to how that integrates with first party auth here?
Yeah, so if you want to use an API key, right? Like I mentioned, they all have like different restrictions, right? You can have like Android header restrictions or iOS header restrictions. If you're just skipping past this and like not doing it properly, right? You're going to skip so many keys that could otherwise work. Oh, and another thing I want to mention, right? So all these APIs, they have an origin whitelist. Mm-hmm. So with first party auth, right, you can't just use any origin you want. You have to use a specific like whitelisted origin. If you don't use a whitelisted origin, it's going to give you some like error that just says session token like invalid or something, session cookie invalid. But it's a fake error. Like it actually just means the origin is not whitelisted. So you can brute force all of the origins, like a bunch of lists of like Google domains, and find the working origin. And in fact, the key to this is, right, if you find any like any Google APIs just only work on corp origins, that's a huge red flag. Like, I found so many bugs on ones that just only work in corp like origins. So you can literally just corp origins there. And in fact, the origin doesn't even have to be like .google.com. It can be like with google.com, even though like the cookies obviously doesn't make sense for it to be there, but it'll work.
Wow, that's very interesting. I need to get a wider scope of these domains cataloged for my brute force, I think, because I mean, I've got a ton of APIs that I have working API keys for, but not a referrer that's correctly scoped. So I bet that's one of the keys that I'm kind of falling off on here and missing access to a lot of auth.
It feels like there's so many secret API versions in the path, and also so many different secret labels as well.
Mm. Yeah. You really got to get all of these pieces together, man. And I bet Brutcat has decent coverage, but not probably perfect coverage. So I wonder what's going to happen next. The next time Brutcat like figures out some little thing and then applies it across the scale of the whole system, how many more APIs and stuff he's going to get access to. Actually, that's a good question. Do you know what the percentage of APIs that you have where you don't have access to like either the correct origin or a key to access it, or do you know any of those numbers?
Okay, so one thing I will say is that, like I mentioned before, how I had most of my success with first party auth, right? But like, to be honest, right, there's a whole untapped surface of using like the bearer auth like better, because like my system for the bearer auth is just kind of like taped together. It's not that good. Like my focus is mostly first party auth. If you use bearer auth and try to find all these different various clients and find ways, or even it doesn't have to be a client that way. It could be like, let's say I'm hacking GCP and I managed to get an access token of like a tenant project. Maybe that has access to some APIs that otherwise you wouldn't be able to access. And if it's an internal API, it probably has some bugs in it. So that whole area is completely untapped, and I haven't even extracted that yet.
Oh my gosh, dude. Why are you saying that on the podcast? Oh my gosh, dude. That is
Show devotees.
Yeah, people, dude. Well, you know, that's another thing that'd be interesting is I got to get you to like give me an API endpoint or something that I can hit and like just tell me whether you've got like a certain API key. Like I give you an API key and you're like, yes or no, I don't know about this, right? Because it'd be pretty fun if you know, we could just do this game of like, can I give Brute Cat an API key that he doesn't have? And will it unlock access to any scope for him? That'd be pretty cool.
Well, the same way I feel like people reach out to you for like, oh, I have this CSPT. Can you help me turn it into a bug or whatever? And like people do that to me with like prompt injection or kubeparameter injection or whatever. Like Brute Cat needs an endpoint where people can be like, hey, I have this functionality. I've got this primitive. Is this a bug? Or like, can we chain this to other things to get a bug? Like we need like a Brute Cat escalation endpoint.
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh. He's going to start running like the freaking Google primitive black mafia market over here. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that's amazing.
That just sounds a good idea. I could have like an endpoint where you can put your key there and or like your project number there or not. It'll tell you if I have the key or not. And then if I don't have the key, maybe you could add it to this and we can set the bounty.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be pretty fun. Exactly, man. Yeah. Ship it, dude. Ship it. We'll put it on the pod and people can just throw API keys at you and you can like check it and see if it's like a Google API key or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That would be pretty sick. Okay. So man, we've covered so much here. I'm trying to think about
highlight.
Yeah, I will try to do a little bit of a summary here. So as far as all of this goes, the key components are one, identifying your API target. This can be a googleapis.com or it could be a client six. There could be an alias between the two, but there isn't always. Then you need to get auth to this thing, which you said largely is going to be done via first party auth, which requires an API key, SAPI underscore SID cookie for you to create that hash that needs to go in the auth bearer, and then your cookies and a correct origin and referrer. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there's also the extra component I mentioned for the computing the authorization header. I actually provided the leaked like TS file or whatever, which I got from the source map. So it's in this log.
Mm.
So you can just use that.
Okay.
To compute the whole thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, and there's also some like goated Stack Overflow article that had some code for that too. That's what I used for my implementation. But yeah, actually using the actual TSX from Google's implementation is way better. And there are, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there are individual error messages that can tell us whether we are missing an origin header or a referrer header, or it doesn't support this specific type of auth and that sort of thing. And you have to be able to understand, you know, what is the situation for this given API key and API pair.
Exactly. And so the errors are all documented in this blog post. And not only that, I've also had a section in this where I show like each layer of where things are checked, right? So for example, for brooding keys, right, the past, right, you could like finding valid keys, you have to get first party auth first working, and then you have to like get like referrers all working. You get what I mean? Like there's different like layers to this. You have to get like authentication first, and only then you can start like brooding the keys. So if you want to build your program for like brooding the keys for each API, you should like take note of all these different things. I even had a section here where I showed each layer essentially. So you can feed that to your plot or whatever and build this whole
thing. Interesting. Okay. So I think I'm doing this the other way around. I think I am trying to determine if the API key gains access. Oh, you know, I'm doing this wrong. Because what I'm doing is I'm only using the API key to determine whether I can hit the discovery docs or not, right? So, but there's actually what you're saying is that I should be using, okay, so let me ask you this. How do you determine whether first party auth is working for a given API without having an API endpoint to hit on that API?
You mean like a docs endpoint?
You need an API method in order to be able to check if you can do first party auth, right? You just need one API method.
Okay.
And API methods, you don't have to necessarily have a doc to test API methods, right? Why can't I test an API method that's like leaked in some JavaScript file or something? So you can use that and sort of like test it that way. So you don't have to test it through the discovery document. And a lot of times the discovery document goes down, but you have an older discovery document. So you still want to use the methods to test it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So we do need a method. So we need a method and we need a host. And then we can, using that, we can check whether it supports first party auth, even if we don't have an API key that's compatible with that host. Is that correct or not?
Okay, no, I think I misspoke earlier. You need to have a, okay, so you need to have like a valid API key first in order to even start like getting this API if you want to check first party auth, right? So that key check happens first. And then after that, it checks for restrictions of the key. So does this like key have like the right referrer header or does it have the right iOS header, right? So that whole thing happens. And then at that point, I think the first party auth like origin check happens. So it checks whether you have the right origin for your first party auth. If not, it just says session cookie invalid. If you have everything sorted so far, it checks the visibility label. Does your key have the, or does GCP project tied to your key have the label that's needed for this endpoint? If it doesn't, return method not found, which is like that bullshit like response. Mm-hmm. But if it does, it lets you true. Then it checks, is this method blocked for this like GCP project or key or something? Like certain keys have like certain like methods like blocked for them. So you have to get through this whole thing and only then you can get your request processed.
Wow.
And this is why it's so hard to test Google APIs. Goodness.
Yeah. And this is why Brute says, like, actually, you know, once you get through the security by obscurity, it's not that hardened of a target, right? Because nobody can get through the security by obscurity here, which is crazy. Okay. So we go through all of that whole flow. We get an API, we get a method, we correlate the API key. Then we determine first party auth. We make sure that we have our referrer and our origin header that work with that for us to be able to generate that first party auth. We establish an authenticated, you know, primitive to access the specific API. Then from there, we utilize some tricks or whatever to either, you know, get the discovery doc from, /discovery/REST, or we call methods that we found inside of JS files related to the specific host, which you have documented in your correlation, which I assume came from your Chrome extension that you're using to, or the big data research that you've done that essentially correlates where you got that specific API key or host. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you feed all of that into the AI. Then the AI tries to take that structure, you know, either with the discovery docs or with the JS files or whatever, and then construct a valid proto JSON request body and then send that to the API, and then it will respond or not respond, you know, until you tweak it until you hit something you're not supposed to be hitting. Is that a good summary?
I think the key here is that everything's abstracted away. The AI is not thinking of this, right? Mm. The tooling is all doing this. Like the AI just thinks about the body, what's it in. Like all this happens behind the scenes in the tool itself. Like all this research into which API has first party auth enabled, what keys we have for this. These are all like background tooling that I've done. And the AI itself is just testing the specific body, like the body for the endpoint.
Yeah, yeah. That's essential. That's essential. Is you're perfectly exemplifying what, you know, we should not use AI for things that you can do without AI, right? Like if you can brute force all these things, correlate all of this, establish your auth primitives, you know, enumerate these specific endpoints or whatever. If you can do all of that outside of AI, then don't use AI for that. Only use AI for the very little tiny bit of, you know, intellectual magic that you need to correlate and construct these request bodies. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Nice, dude. Dang. That is pretty. You know, it's starting to make sense, man. It's starting to make sense, you know, why your method is producing such fruitful results. Okay, so you mentioned in here, just kind of going into that AI implementation about the Ralph Wiggum loop and stuff like that. Are you still using that? Are you using, you know, the slash loop primitives now? How do you train your AI on when to give up and be done testing an API versus when to keep pushing?
Okay, so in this case, so the whole thing I mentioned where I did was AI SDK and I had like MCP tools set up. So that's all scrapped now. Mm-hmm. Instead, I have like a whole container or whatever. Like I have where Cloud Code's running in the container. I think it's a similar setup to what you have, mm-hmm. but
yeah.
So I have I feed the AI or whatever, like whatever it needs to do this. And in fact, the discovery documents, I'm not even providing it as a context. In the past, I used to provide it as a context, but that's a horrible method. The better method is you can convert this to like markdown files and the AI can read that, right? So the AI reads all of this and then according to that, it tests whatever it wants. In terms of giving up, I would say that, okay, so this loop I have this like thing where it doesn't end until it like finishes testing everything. Like if it tries ending and it hasn't tested everything, I'm not gonna let it end. I'm gonna poke it again and say, oh, you have not finished testing these endpoints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of a way I can ensure it doesn't just quit early and it ensures it tests everything. Mm.
Do you mean literally via code? Like if it hasn't seen, yeah, like if your like opcodes don't show that it's hit every single endpoint for coverage, then it keeps going?
Precisely.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm. Dude, he's baked in like at literally every hackbot type trick in the book just naturally.
Yeah, that is amazing. I'm my brain is kind of spinning with that now because yeah, of course you can check what request this thing has sent, right? Yeah.
You can just take a sitemap and be like, if you haven't hit every API key or every API path, then you're not allowed to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool, man. Codifying all of that is definitely got to be what's pushing this to the next level. I mean, obviously, including, you know, your in-depth understanding of the Google APIs and all of that structure. But I think, you know, you're using AI better than I've seen almost anybody use AI to this point. And I think this is a really key component of that. Awesome, man. All right. Well, let's go from there and let's go a little bit further down in the write-up and then talk about some of the Pwning Google stories that you have from this result. Does that sound good, or do you have any other comments to put in that whole infrastructure section?
Okay, I think that sounds good. Yeah, we can cover a few of these. This is the most fun part. Like, so you can completely pull and prove. Like, there's so many different bugs here. It's so cool. And these are just a few of them, by the way. I couldn't fit all of them in the write-up because, like, I had to get Sam to, like, vet all of these.
Right.
And see which one. Yeah.
Poor Sam.
But these are the ones that finalized.
Right.
But like, the product team had to, like, give feedback for, like, each of them. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that all ended up happening. But yeah, I wish I could have included more, to be honest. There's a lot more cooler ones I could have included.
Yeah,
but
dude, you've got like 15, you know, ATOs.
ATO,
like,
ATO, ATO.
This is ridiculous, dude. Okay, all right, hit us.
Okay, so the first one is Google Voice. So this is super funny. This is literally like you don't even need auth for this endpoint. Like this GFiber Voice PA, you just hit this endpoint with like an unobfuscated Gaia ID. Keep in mind, these are like incremental, basically. You can like increment this. And it dumps like the Google account phone number, the Google Voice number, like the email, their PIN, like everything. Okay, and it just dumps everything. And it didn't even end there. So there was this endpoint in this where you can assign a number. So I can add a phone number to your Google account. And it will be like, literally, if you go to my account, the Google account /phone, you'll see it there.
Oh my god!
That was pretty funny.
That is.
I can't believe this had no auth.
Oh
yeah, man. It was. You just needed a key. Like, I guess nobody found the key, so that's why nobody found it.
Do you know off the top of your head where this key came from? Like, what strategy you used to get this key?
Okay, honestly, I have no tracking for that. I have legit no clue where the key came from. Probably one of the various sources I had, but yeah.
I feel like that would be a really interesting piece, though, dude, is to like know, okay, hey, 80% of my keys that I get vulnerabilities in come from like old APKs or something like that, right?
Yeah, I tracked where I found all of mine, so I can like always ask it where it found it.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, but I'm also not brute guy, so.
Yeah, and I also only have like 700 keys or 800 keys versus like, same. Yeah. Wow, dude, that is horrifying for one, and also very interesting scope. I think I think you said in the write-up that this was actually like some sort of provider API. Is that what happened?
So okay, I'm not too sure what this whole like API is, honestly. It looks like some admin management API. But the more interesting part of this API is not only could you do all this Google account stuff, it seemed to be like some sort of like Google Fiber stuff as well. So if you look at the bottom right, there's like some sort of seemingly endpoint that you could do a SIM swap with. Like, I can just start a number port. I mean, I never got to testing this because I already reported it and I just didn't like go too much because I didn't want to like lose a bounty. But yeah, these are all like super interesting endpoints. I wish I could have tested.
Dude, I'm peeved right now because I'm about to log into my freaking discovery tool that I use to track the. I think I have this. I think I have this key and this API. That is not what I wanted to see today, Broodcat. That is, oh man, that is frustrating.
So what did you miss this?
I don't know what I missed, man. Because I actually, you know, what's interesting is I have, just personally, I have Google Fi, and I was like, oh, this is such an interesting, you know, attack surface because not very many people actually have Google Fi as their phone provider, right? So I found a bunch of bugs in Google Fi and worked on that scope a lot. Okay. All right. I'm pretty sure I've seen this exact endpoint, which makes me very mad. Especially since there's no auth, right? Like if there was some crazy shit you were doing, okay.
Anyway. It's just a get URL. I can just do a get to this, this is a URL and you can see the phone number and everything. It's so stupid. And I think that maybe the reason you might have missed it is because it takes an unobfuscated guy ID. So this is actually one trick I did is I provided a context of all the different accounts it has access to, as well as IDs for each account. So the unobfuscated ID, the focus obfuscated guy ID, all these different various things, a project number, project ID. So it has values to test with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's definitely necessary. And I don't have AI hooked up to mine. So I just I had to manually test all of them. Wow. Yeah, this is a beautiful bug. Or, I don't know. When did you find this bug? Do you know when this was?
Probably maybe January this year.
Of this year? Of 2026?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, all of this is 2026.
Oh, man. Yeah. All of this is 26. Man, heck me, man. All right, whatever. All right, what's the next one? This is the...
Okay, so, we can cover AdExchange. Okay, another one is Eldar. Okay, that's kind of interesting. So Eldar is actually... Okay, Eldar.corp at Google.com. When you visit, this is a corporate domain, but for some reason the API wasn't on the corporate Google .com. It was exposed publicly. So the API was public, but the domain itself was not public. So the front end, I mean. Ah. So this is kind of funny. So Eldar essentially is this thing. I spoke to Eduardo. Do you know who Eduardo is?
Yeah, he works for Google.
Yeah, exactly. So I was talking to him about what Eldar is exactly, and it was quite interesting. When you report a bug, right, and they have to discuss with the product team in terms of what is a bug and what's intended functionality, this all goes through Eldar. And not only that, it also has Eldar has a bunch of if let's say I'm doing, I'm pretty sure it works this way. If I'm doing some sort of investigation, I want to get access to certain accounts or log files, I have to go through Eldar. That's my understanding of this. So, if you're a Googler. So Eldar was pretty funny because literally everything was exposed. I could start reading every assessment or everything. You can see logs access requests. And I even made a little front end or something. You could see how the Eldar report looks like.
Oh my god.
I was able to get some CSS elements. Oh. And the way I found out I got this bug was because my AI made an Eldar report and it shared it with my email or some shit. And I checked my email and I started seeing all these emails from Eldar, no reply at Google.com, and had G3 docs links everywhere and all these bugganizer links. So I already knew I Googled some bug.
Wow, dude, that's crazy. So the AI submitted a report and then you got emails to your private Gmail account that was saying linking to this Google 3 stuff. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I will say I did have a similar thing the other day with my hackbot where I was hacking on something. I was writing a report actually. And I looked down at my phone And I see an email from this government target that I'm working on, and it's POC, and the title and the subject line, and I'm like, oh, okay. And it just, it wasn't a crazy bug. It had full impersonation of this, government entity or whatever. But
when it's hilarious that it emailed you.
It pulled the email from my account or whatever, and emailed me with it, which was pretty funny. So yeah, dude, wow, this is crazy. And this one, I'm just looking at the auth. It looks like you used origin www.google.com and you were able to get in with first party auth.
Yeah. So this one didn't have any the whitelist was a wild card for start by Google.com. So you could just use anything start Google.com.
Wow. Dang. That's crazy, dude. Look at this UI, dude. You're such a jerk. You made this UI. You're like, hey, I actually recreated Eldar on the. Oh my gosh.
If you scroll through it, you can see a bunch of internal stuff.
Oh my God. What is this?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I managed to get this approved through Google.
How?
I don't know how they approved this.
You've got some stuff blocked out. That's,
Oh, yeah. I had to bleep out the emails. That was the one thing that I couldn't settle on.
Dude, you've even got the LLC thing at the bottom. That's hilarious, dude. I love AI.
Okay, and this is the official Eldar logo. Yeah, so I have everything. I think Sam told me this looks pretty accurate to the real one.
That's so
dude, funny. If you don't mind me asking, how do you stay organized? So like, even with my hackbot, like obviously attacking across a bunch of other companies, and I feel like it's still a lot of times kind of confusing to keep up with everything. And then when I'm doing these like full Google sweeps, like I basically, you know, attempted to do what you've done here back before the live hacking event in Seoul. And I, you know, again, I had some success, but not nearly as much as you did. But even just like thinking back on it, like I just cannot stay so organized. Like, how do you manage all of this?
I mean, look, when I'm working on this one target, that's all I'm going to be working on. Like, that's all I'm thinking about. Like, whenever I do anything, I'm just like, when I'm sleeping, I get dreams about this. Like, that's the level of like dedication I have. So I'll just keep focusing on this. So everything is like in my head. Like, whenever I find a gadget, or I'll implement it like straight away, or like vibe code it, like that moment. So yeah, that's why I'm just like focused on this one thing and do it as well as possible. Because I think Google like pays the most, right? So compared to other programs. So I just wanted to focus on this, especially given my domain knowledge in this.
Yeah. You definitely, I mean, the domain knowledge you have is a massive advantage. Before I got, you know, going back to the last bug, the fiber one, I got a little, you know, freaked out there at the end, but I do realize we missed a little bit about the Z handlers there. So,
oh yeah.
Are you okay, catching Z handlers on googleapis.com domains?
Yeah. So in fact, this one, like I just noticed when they patched it out, because they patched, it's like a P0, they patched it super fast, but they did some, I don't know what they were doing, because I saw some super sus like Envoy proxy like error or something when I go to the main domain. Then I sent it to like Michael. I was showing him like, look at this. And then like we ran like FF up, mm-hmm. or like whatever, and we were able to find a bunch of paths. And then we checked and some of them worked. Like, this is how a Z handler looks like. This is a /BTC Z handler.
Wow.
Okay. It's a dream. This is just like the type of, I don't know why, but this is like peak hacking for me. Like when I read this, I'm like, I'm going to find this on a Google API.
Yeah, dude, you got to experience this.
So this is no auth.
Yeah, this is, you could just use this. And in fact, right, if you're smart, you would be scanning for this on all APIs and all
of course. Like, domains. Yes, I'm doing
that. They pop up randomly and you can get so much useful information from them, right? And that could be used for like later attacks as well.
Wow. Wow, dude. Dang. That's crazy. Okay. Let's go to the ad exchange ATO now.
Okay. Ad exchange. Okay. This was like I'm not too sure what ad exchange is. I think it's just some like ad management platform, but this was kind of funny. So first I was on the prod API, right?
Okay. Hold on. Pause. So, ad exchange is extremely pivotal to Google's success as a company. If you haven't, heard of this product, I would tell you, go check out, have you ever listened to the Acquired podcast? No?
I don't think
so. Dude, you got to check this out. They do a three-part series. They're like, they do very, very in-depth assessments of like very big successful companies. You should go listen to their three-part series on Google, because it mentions this product a good bit, and it's a good has a good bit to do with Google's success, if I recall correctly. So anyway, I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, so this okay, I'm not too familiar with this product, but like as you mentioned, I'm pretty sure this is quite a important, like critical product for them.
Yeah.
And it allows like a publishers or whatever to like sell advertising space on their like website, I guess. Mm. So this was quite impactful. But anyways, at the start, right, I found this like cookie matching accounts, right? It just started dumping like all the accounts. But like if this by itself, like it was kind of interesting. Like it was showing like all the different, like it was like literally one request, and it was like a completely massive response, and every single account that existed was on this, right? So I could see all the different like companies, like the PTE or whatever, like the private limited, all this kind of stuff. But I couldn't actually do anything more with this. So I was kind of stuck here at first. Like, so I have the account IDs, but what can I do with that? But turns out, right, for whatever reason, they have, okay, this is actually kind of funny. So the staging environment of this like pointed to prod. So there's like a test dash ad exchange buyer dash Google APIs, right?
Oh my
yeah.
God.
So this endpoint had no access controls. You could freely do whatever you wanted, and you can start referencing the prod identities, and you can start seeing all the prod data.
You're kidding. No way. So I guess it just, in the back end, it had access to the prod database.
Okay, so one thing in Google, right, I don't think there's such a thing as staging. There's no such thing as staging. Like, everything is production. So this points to production. A lot of the times you might see substaging has like a different database. I mean, that could be, it's possible, but for most of the time, it just points to prod. So this is actually a trick you can use to bypass it. So remember the LDAR I was mentioning earlier? I actually bypassed the LDAR initial fix by doing the same thing on auto push. Auto push is like another like staging environment, and they doubled the bounty.
Wow.
Because I could do it once again.
Dang. Yeah, dude, there's got to be, there's got to be so many things that I need to go back and test after this episode. That's crazy. Oh, and so I'm just reading through this. I mean, it's literally just first party auth, and then you just start. I mean, it's like stuff you would see on, you know, a 3,000, you know, crit max bounty, you know, program, like just these numeric IDs in the path, and then you're just doing whatever the heck you want. This is crazy, dude. Wow. All right. I'm kind of blown away, like, because I felt like Google is such a difficult target, but when you put it together, the pieces like this, you start to see there's a lot of things that you can access that you shouldn't be able to access if you master first party auth and, you know, enumeration of all of the API keys, right? Very
interesting. It's like an onion. If you peel away like the layers or whatever, and then finally you reach the gold mine that's inside where nobody touches the text surface.
Yeah, dude. Frick, that's beautiful. And there's like 20 years of, you know, 20 years plus of like data in there. It's crazy. All right. What is, let's keep going. You want to do leaking YouTube videos or what?
Okay. Mm. Yeah, this kind of relates to like, so the other thing I was mentioning. So pretty much every Google, every YouTube channel that's a partner has like this whatever hidden CMS account, a content manager. So content manager is like this tool. It's like a God mode for YouTube where you can strike any channel or like banning channel. So this is meant for like big enterprises, but like YouTube partners have like a secret account that's like this, the same thing, but it's used for like content ID matching. It's like some tool in YouTube. But yeah, the interesting thing was that whenever a YouTuber uploaded a video, right, this was actually added as a content ID asset because that's how it does the content ID like copyright matching tool, right? So if it turns out, right, you, like the name of this asset is literally just like auto-generated asset dash the video ID. So if you search all assets for auto-generated asset dash, like just dash, and then you can start like leaking every single like unlisted video and stuff like that they thought was private.
Wait, what do you mean search for this? You're not like...
Because there's a YouTube partner API. You can just search for all this.
Wow. Okay. And what all you need to know is like this title or what?
Yeah, I think he's saying that. These were originally like anyone who ever has ever found this API and tested it has just assumed probably that it was just like public assets because when you search it, it's like, oh yeah, these are just videos that exist on YouTube, right? It's no big deal. But what he's saying is that all the private ones were still in there, but obviously people hadn't really noticed that. Way you could find them is by searching for auto generated asset dash, and then everything after that was like technically like the title of the private video.
Wow, is that accurate?
The interesting thing about this,
yeah, did I say that right?
Yeah, exactly. And you can use the filters, right? So okay, it's theoretically possible. Like I made a POC for this where I can have like a program that's running that's constantly getting new like video IDs because I have like, I can filter by time, right? So I keep fetching this like every few seconds and I keep like getting video IDs. So if I upload a video or any partner channel, you'll see it pop it up there. So you can like capture like videos and stuff. Wow. Or you can look at historic, you can scrape all the historic videos. There's so much stuff you can do here. And I think the impact for this is actually quite big because if you think about it, right, there's all this like Polymarket and these kind of prediction sites where like I could, if let's say Google has like, they upload like the Gemini model, like video, like they send it as a premiere or something. If you can just leak it through this, you'll know the data that's going to be released. And then you can sort of make a Polymarket bet on that.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah, this is one, and you got 12K for this. This is one of those bugs where if you were actually like a black hat, you could have just made so much more money off of it. Just like, oh my gosh.
This hitting me. Aren't some unlisted videos like capture the flags and like big CTFs? Like, wasn't that like the solution to Mr. Beast's CTF?
And not just that. They're even like POCs. If I upload like a POC or something exploit, like that's gonna be here.
Oh my gosh, dude!
It was a massive leak, yeah.
Yeah, see, you know, and 12K for this.
More.
Were they considering
way more.
This abuse? Because is this 10K plus
1.2? No, this is not abuse. Okay, actually, you know, they tried doing this as abuse first, but I got it out of abuse. But But it's still like a, yeah, I don't know. They just gave it 12K. I'm not sure. Wow. But I think that the impact is much more, in my opinion.
Yeah, dude. Me too, man. Me too. Okay, we've got time for maybe one more of these, of your write-ups, and then I want to hit this Cloud Console GraphQL stuff. Which one do you think we should go with?
Okay, so PLX is very interesting. Okay. So maybe we can check that. So PLX, if you know anything about Google, right? PLX is their, like, it's their internal, like, dashboard thing. So
yeah, if we know anything about Google, then you know that, right? Right, Reza?
Yeah, of course. Exactly. I was like, yeah, of course. PLX.
Yeah, PLX, yeah, of course, yeah. Just hides Google Bug Hunter shirt underneath the hands. okay, tell us about PLX, which of course I know about already.
Okay, it's this tables thing where you can create like a table and you can put like data inside, right? So any Googler you ask will know what PLX is because they use it every day. So this is very interesting. Anyways, this is so stupid. They had this API, like the Data Hub, like the client six of Google.com. So this was like, Data Hub is kind of this API that's meant for like access controls for PLX, right? So one of the endpoints, this was the very, very beginning, like you could just use like suggest, and then you could start suggesting like tables and stuff. So this started like leaking a bunch of like tables and stuff. But, and you could see like data is like need to know employee data or something, but yeah, that was kind of interesting. But like, this is just a table names. I wanted to get more than this, right? So at first I was stuck here, but then it turns out, right, the staging environment for this, you could just set an IAM policy and then add yourself as the admin of the table. Then you take over the whole table.
Oh my gosh. Look at this. No way.
And then
way.
He dumped it and he was so stoked because his OCenter was like, I just got all the information.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so if you scroll down, you can see some of the tables and stuff. Like, I gave a bunch of like internal information here, but if you scroll down, you can see like they're petabytes in size, like a lot of them.
No. Okay,
but the
way.
Problem was, see, you could
holy yeah, moly.
This is like a long functionality. But the issue here was you couldn't directly query the table stuff. You have the ACL endpoint. Like you have the access control, but I have no way to query it, right? But so okay, something funny. I don't think I wrote it here, but just like maybe a month later, like I was working with Strugged again, and basically he found this like that same application integration had like this one query you could do, like a run, I forgot what it was called. Like, I think like some sort of like query you could do, like some sort of task you could do. And it was like, even after all the RCE patches, this still worked. And you could like query this tables itself with that. So yeah, that was pretty funny.
I just want to read this real quick. This is one of the descriptions of one of the, I guess, functions in here. Generate a dump of the YPP corpus of lower tier channels for purposes of capitalized conqueror.
What the heck?
It's like, oh man, I want to use all of these things. I want to play with all these things.
Goodness. This is crazy, dude. Wow. And 12K. 12K for that.
Wait, this one? PLX is 12K too?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's whatever, I guess.
Yeah. Wow. Dude, this is really crazy research. And I think that it's really impressive how you pivot around staging and you and this other guy, I think Shrugged is his name from the first one, that, you know, you guys do multi-step exploits, like adding yourself as an IAM user and then going back and, you know, hitting these tables, right? And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, probably AI isn't putting together these chains for you. It's giving you primitives.
Oh, yeah.
And then you are definitely putting it together yourself.
100%. Like, this is all not AI. Like, AI just finds an initial like lead or something, but the rest of the post exploitation is mostly just like doing it manually. I don't think that AI is like good enough to combine like different like primitives together and think of stuff like that right now, maybe in the future. But yeah, this part of it is completely manual.
Wow.
It definitely can on like stuff that is more regular, but I think you're definitely right on programs like this where it's requiring so much like contextual knowledge that you have about Google that it just doesn't have.
Mm. Totally. Yeah, man. So I definitely want to go and move over to this GraphQL stuff. But as soon as I clicked on this link, I see data batch execute. So maybe it'll all pull together. But I also really wanted to get your expertise on that because I see that everywhere and it's very opaque. And I wish that there was some primitive that I could use to get more information out of these batch execute requests. Do you have anything that you care to share on that?
Okay, so the only thing is there's like this known method where in the JavaScript file, the RPC ID, you can kind of like find the real RPC or the obfuscated ID.
Yeah.
But that's like the only real trick you have. Apart from that, like, I'm not aware of any other trick. You have to just use the JavaScript files and maybe your AI can like figure out what's happening there for the JavaScript file and then sort of piece together that. But yeah, I built up this whole like catalog of all the RPC IDs I could and like brute force them on all the different domains and stuff. Like, I have this tooling where I can sort of test that, but I haven't found like too many bugs from bash execute directly, but I'm sure there's bugs here because this is just security by obscurity. Like, I feel like Google, if you're listening, maybe have some grant or something where you give us all the like the protobuf types and everything for all of these bash execute.
I have begged them for that because that would be, I mean, there's so many bugs there. I'm positive. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just hidden away. Like, I'm not sure that's what they really want. Like, you really want security by obscurity?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So tell me about this Google Cloud console GraphQL stuff that you have here, which apparently starts with Google Classroom in some way.
Okay. No. So essentially, I was just explaining in this, right? Mm-hmm. Where like Google Classroom is a good example of like, where you have a batch execute endpoint, but the reality is behind the batch execute, it's just a Google API, right? But mm-hmm. you have to reach it through this batch execute because it's not publicly, the RPC is not publicly exposed. So you have to go through this weird proxy and then you can hit the actual Google API behind the scenes. So in this case, this like batch execute, which is this RPC ID, is actually this homeroom.dataservices or like whatever API, right? So in the classroom PA API, but you can't really, I don't think you can actually hit this directly. So this is a way you can get more attack surface, right, through all these various proxies. But one of the most interesting proxies was this Cloud Console. So Cloud Console, as you know, it uses GraphQL. So if you browse around Cloud Console, you'll see these like requests for like Cloud Console PA or whatever. And it's all like GraphQL requests. It looks giant. It looks intimidating. But the reality of it is it's actually quite funny. So whenever you send a request, it's just using Google APIs in the backend. And they screwed up big time. The staging endpoint for this was like allowed you to like introspect everything because they didn't validate the signature on staging.
Wow.
So yeah, basically my AI actually reported this as a lead. So it's saying like, oh, you can just introspect this. And I didn't realize it at first. And then I looked at it more. I was like, wait a second. Like, this opens up a whole new world of attack surface because like I wouldn't have been able to reach this from Google APIs directly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Wow. That must have been, yeah, dude, that's a game changer. Wow.
So a lot of this part of this write-up is just talking about like how we basically, okay, I was working with Michael Dalton, right? Because he's really familiar with GraphQL. So he was handling most of the, like porting my AI tool or whatever for scanning this bugs, this GraphQL stuff instead, right? So we use a lot of various tricks in this sort of, because you see, if you look at this whole like get resource building info, like some of these are like mapped to RPCs, right? It's kind of complicated because some of these are mapped RPCs. It's hard to tell. So we have to kind of assume that some of them are RPCs. And in fact, they had comments as well. So that was very interesting. We had to package this all together and give it to the AI. And we started testing like the whole thing. Oh yeah, another point I want to raise is that you have to, okay, this is one thing you have to be a bit careful of, because if you're testing GCP, you need like a free trial account or you're not going to be able to reach most of the attack surface. But if you give it access to like GraphQL or whatever, it can activate the free trial. So you have to be super careful here, because if you can activate the full billing. So if you accidentally enable billing and it starts like costing a lot of money, you're gonna get bleeded like dry or something. Like,
yeah, I literally got charged $3,000 like 2 weeks ago.
Was only
able to do a refund for like $2,000 of it. I ended up eating the other $1,000. Yeah, and it's because like in the model was literally like, oh, I was able to enable 15 free seats on this service. It's like, no, it's not free. They charge you after the fact. You spin it up and then they charge you later.
Oh my gosh.
But that's also amazing. It's so useful, right? Because like I was talking to another Google hacker, I know you know them, Brutecat, named Pedros. And Pedros is like really smart and wrote like that Fireblazer tool, which I mean, he's also just like Brutecat, willing to share so much with the community when really if he had just used it only himself, he would have made way more money probably. And he doesn't use any billing accounts for any of his testing. And so even though he's a super talented Google hacker who's like, you know, made a lot of money and like is not willing to use a billing account. And I'm sure there's so many bugs behind that because there's probably lots of people like him, you know, or people who are just like hesitant or scared. And so for me, I feel like I have to keep leaning into using things that are behind the billing account, but it's also like this huge risk at the same time. So
totally.
Okay. So the way I solve this problem actually is, okay, I realized that I could create the free trial or whatever. So I could create a free trial on one Gaia. Then I have a different Gaia, which is the actual testing one, the testing account that AI has access to. And in that, I temporarily give the project access to the testing guy through the free trial account one. I link the free trial to that one. Then I remove it from the account or whatever. So it can never actually activate the free trial. Does that make sense? The building account is different from the project owner.
Interesting. Okay. So you're using Google's own privilege system there to prevent. I bet we could also just go in there and put billing limits, couldn't we?
I don't think that's possible.
You set a billing limit, but it doesn't actually limit how much they charge you. It they don't have anything for that. They just notify you.
Yeah, exactly. It's bullshit. Like they'll just tell you, you just lost $5,000.
Yeah, no, and Justin, he's not wrong. Yeah. And there's literally no way to disable a lot of these services without reaching out to support, and then you're waiting days. That's exactly what happened to me. As soon as I saw the charge, I immediately contacted support, and I immediately told AI hey, go cancel this. And it destroyed all the services. It even disabled the APIs at the API level, but they kept charging me because the only way to turn on and off Vertex for enterprise or something is buy support. And so Brutecrat is exactly right. You literally cannot get out of getting charged in those cases. And I kept emailing them every day and was like, hey, I just received another $800 charge. Please go turn it off. I'm bleeding money. And then same thing. You apparently can close the billing account, but I have real services for my real apps running on the same billing account.
Yeah, we can't do that. We gotta create separate accounts for that. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. Never link that together, and you have to have a different. If you use a trick I mentioned, where you have a different, two different Gaias, one that owns the free trial and the other one that doesn't have access to it, but it's the project owner. This has worked so far, but keep in mind, the AI will also. It's like a monkey with a machine gun. It's gonna bleed out the whole use the whole $300 in 10 seconds. So you have to keep having new free trials. So I have 10 free trials so far. All different using my mom's card, my dad's card, all different every card I can get.
Hey mom, I'm gonna give your credit card to my AI, and yeah, great.
It has a habit of spending too much money. Sorry about that.
yeah, exactly.
Oh, you're just gonna charge $10,000? Yeah, my bad.
My bad. Wow, man, that's awesome. So you were able to also, kind of hit some GraphQL stuff in combination with Google's RPC stuff across the scope. So I think that is. For me, I think GraphQL stuff is a little bit more approachable than a lot of this Google RPC proto-JSON nonsense. But that is impressive that you were able to bridge that gap. I think we've got about 5 more minutes left. There's so much to cover in this blog post. So really, listeners, you have to go and read this blog post it's gospel, really. So we'll link the blog post in the description,
or just don't just listen to the audio and go give Brutecrat a follow and hire his pen test, but don't apply any of these learnings to your hacking.
That'd be great. That's what I would recommend personally for my own benefit.
That's right.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to add in here and shout out that you feel like the people really need to know from these last couple sections?
Okay, yeah, maybe one thing I can mention is the Vertex Assistant. So this is a $30,000 bounty, but it's very interesting. So the way this one worked is it's actually a feature that wasn't even rolled out yet. So we were able to enable the experiment. Okay, so first, the AI found it from the introspection and it found it, but we couldn't even find the functionality of this. If we were looking through the whole UI, it just didn't exist.
Right.
But by using various tricks and changing the JavaScript or whatever, and using the console and setting a debug point and a breakpoint and stuff like that, we were able to set a flag to enable it, and then we could see the UI. So in this case, I think they paid for it because they spoke to the product team and they decided that while normally they don't pay for such things, in this case it was probably going to be released. So yeah, but they may not do this in the future. But I think that there's a lot of attack service in terms of experimental features that you may want to look at.
Yeah, 100%, man. I've had a lot of success with this. Actually, this is one of my top Google hacking tips: is pay attention to the feature flags. Because Google's, especially now with AI, the release cycle is so rapid. They've got this stuff pushed to prod way before it gets released. Tons of vulnerabilities, and if not vulnerabilities, extra functionality that you could you can be testing and chaining behind those feature flags. That's a great shout out.
Maybe one last thing I can mention, just quickly talk about the App Engine one, because it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
This was so interesting. So for whatever reason, this, the App Engine dashboard, if you just search App Engine in GCP and go to there, it's probably one of the most trafficked GCP products. I'm pretty sure it's used everywhere. But the same dashboard loading endpoint was it just worked unauthenticated, and you could just supply any project ID there. It just dumps all the like stats and stuff.
No
and
way.
Stats, you're joking.
Yeah, the stats contain like the paths and stuff. So if you had like a password reset link, it would just be shown here. So that was really what? Funny.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Dude. Oh, okay. So, hey, also, I noticed here you've got the key in the query parameter versus in the request body. Have you noticed any variance between passing the key in via the X-API key header versus the key in the query parameter?
No, there's no difference. If you use the X-Google API keys, it's the exact same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's not really any difference, just whichever's preference, I guess.
Wow, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah, but in this case, see, a lot of Google products, they just run on App Engine itself. Like the Bug Hunter site was vulnerable to this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to any Bug Hunter's URL, and then I could just query this and see which URL you went to. So that's pretty funny.
Oh my gosh, dude. That is nuts. The logs for all of this. Wow. Very, very good write-ups here on all of this. Thank you so much for sharing all of this, dude. This is very inspiring and also very informative, the combination of both of them. I'm definitely itching to go back to this API scope now. So hopefully, you know, I don't know. I'm a little bit, on one hand, I'm like itching. On the other hand, I'm like, man, Broodcat is so far ahead on this.
I know.
You know, it's like, do I even give it a shot? But my experienced bug hunter within me says, absolutely. You know, everyone's got,
I mean, put everything here.
Yeah.
All the different gadgets and everything I could think of, I put it all in this one post. So if you want to get started in Google server side hacking, like you should just read this and understand every single like primitive and all the gadgets and stuff and apply all of that and build out all the tooling we discussed here. Because you're definitely gonna find bugs. I have no doubt about it. I did not get everything. There's no way. Mm. Right? Like I've definitely missed a lot of stuff.
Wow. Inspiring, man.
I'm sure even based on all those leads and findings that it's reported to you, I mean, at 670K in bounty is like, you had to have overlooked or not found lots of stuff down a lot of those paths, right? Each lead it gives you is like a rabbit trail that you went down. And I'm sure you went, like you probably haven't seen some of those trails. And then some of them you went down and then stopped and got stuck. And then other ones you turned into a ton of bounties, right?
No, definitely. Like, there's probably some stuff in there that I haven't even reviewed it because it just got like washed away or something, and the new leads came up, and I never got to it. But so I still think there's probably still like bugs lying around, especially the thing I mentioned earlier where use a bear token, because I was using this whole research was all these bounties were mostly from the first party auth, but I did not even use like bear auth that much. But I think that you could probably use that, and especially if you get access to some sort of like tenant account that's under like a Google.com GCP project, that you can use that and you'll have access to like tons of more APIs. Like in fact, I know some APIs that have a stubby RCE. I could just see it, but I can't hit it because it doesn't work at first party auth. So it's super annoying. It just pisses me off every time I think about it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I totally feel that. That's how I feel about like all of the APIs that I have access to as well. And you've got all these additional auth methods. Wow. That's very inspiring, dude. Joseph, let's give him a little round of applause here, man. This is
yeah, seriously.
This is some of the best research I think I've ever seen on critical thinking. So thank you so much for gracing us with the opportunity to disseminate this to the people and for coming on here and talking about it at length. I'm gonna give this as much distribution as I possibly can because you know, you'd be goaded forever if it was just the rec to proto, you know, tip that you gave out. But this on top of that is just legendary, man. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this is literally going to be the Google hacking Bible going forward.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, sure. No worries. I think that more bug hunters should try to share research like this, because I'll be honest, right? Like, I met so many people from that initial research I shared that I've been doing collabs with them that I would have never been able to find like so many bounties without them. So I think that sharing knowledge to everybody is actually a good thing in the community.
Mm, yeah. Well, I'm very inspiring. Thank you so much. That's the pod, y'all. Go hack Google. Peace. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time, trust me. All right, I'll see you there.